So my talk is a little bit different from the other talks because I will not talk a lot about my own data. I thought, well, just what I know from some of the things about implicit and explicit attributes, I did work on that. But I thought, what can we, as a main message, might be relevant for the discussion that we have here today. So I called this Overcoming Arrogance, some lessons learned from the literature on implicit and explicit attitudes. I should give you a warning, and that is actually, there is arrogance in the title, but actually I should more talk about, I'm more like to talk about bias and prejudice in my talk. But it might be relevant for arrogance. But sometimes we might be arrogant without and favor our own groups and to outgroups without knowing that we are doing it. And there's all kinds of biases around us and that may be harmful for others. And that is studied a lot in the domain of implicit and explicit attitudes. And I'll talk to you about that. Okay, so we've seen a lot of biases around lately. For example, this guy displayed a lot of biases with his attitudes towards women. I think I don't have to address that too much, but we'll also see all kinds of other biases that have been talked about. For example, within police officers that are more likely to shoot people on the street if they're black than if they're white. That's at least what it seems. And this is an example that's really old, but I think it's really telling about sometimes people would like to treat groups equally, but the way people describe the behavior of minorities is sometimes really telling. So this is an example of another hurricane a long time ago in Katrina. And here is some text on the internet, Yahoo News, about how people deal with this situation. So this is a young man, black young man walks through to chest deep flood water after looting a grocery store in New Orleans. Okay. Here we have another example. A woman walks through chest deep water as she has to loot a grocery store in New Orleans. Okay. Third one, some dark young man walks through chest deep flood water after looting a grocery store. And then we see these two people here, two residents wade through chest deep water after finding bread and soda from a local grocery store.
Do you know if they had evidence?
This is more to illustrate the idea. This is not a recent story, but I think this is sort of telling how people deal with this kind of situation, right? So how, what kind of language people use in order to describe what's going on here. So there are all kinds of situations and people do not want to be biased. For example, if you have in an interview setting, right? So there's a lot of rules and ideas about how to improve more diversity within all kinds of companies and also to hire people from minorities. But it's actually quite dramatic what the chances are to get a job. If, for example, if you're a Moroccan person and you live in the Netherlands. So this is a data set that's really recently published in a Dutch article, shamefully, but probably they'll also soon, hopefully, publish it in an international journal. What they did, those authors, what they did is to they send out a lot of applications to all kinds of different jobs, usually like plumbers, working outside, at schools, etc., etc. Very different jobs, and with similar kind of CVs, comparable, but there were different categories of CVs. So, and one of the thing was that they manipulated. If somehow in the CV
something like a criminal record was mentioned. Okay, so there was no record of criminality. Well, that's good. Some said, honestly, oh yeah, I was involved in some kind of finance before. I was related to criminal activity related to taxes, and I was related in the past and related to sexual abuse. Now, that's one way in the which they manipulated the people who sent out, who applied for these jobs. The second one was the name of the person. Either this was a Dutch name or it was an Islamic. And what is actually telling here is that if you don't have a criminal record, you're way more likely to be invited for a job interview if you're Dutch compared to if you have an Islamic name. But what is actually really dramatic here, perhaps, that you're still more likely to be invited for a job interview if you are have been accused of sexual abuse before, compared to when you have no criminal record for every American man. So I thought this is sort of, what's going on here? We don't know whether this is like explicit kind of intentional discrimination or whether this is more like implicit biases in which people are guided by their negative associations. And I will tell you more about that soon. So what could happen here, and that's this a lot of research within social psychology might be familiar with, is that could be in-group favoritism, right? That people are more likely to help their in-group members, or it could be out-group derogation, negative associations with the out-group. So the in-group favoritism, because last year, for example, Marcin Banaci was in Amin, and he talked about that, and we said, well, the implicit association task, right? So the task in which implicit bias can be revealed within people. Maybe it's more about their in-group rather than negative with the out-group. And she says, yeah, but that's actually part of the problem. If you, as a person, are more likely to have a person that you know as part of your group, and you can already show around here at the university, then this person may be more likely, if for example, if it's a child of friends, then he's more likely to be accepted at this university, and therefore you keep going this kind of inequality system. So in-group favoritism may be as hurtful as negative association with the other. Now this can be intentional, if it may be full-blown and explicit forms of putting your own group first, negative ideas about the out-group, or it can be non-intentional. And we know from a lot of research that actually a lot of situations that these biases can occur without intentionality. People want to be equal. At least a lot of people want to be equal, but in a lot of situations this goes wrong. Even if you have people in the job committee and they want to do a good job, they in the end may hire people more likely from the in-group than from the out-group, even though the resumes are of similar quality. So how can we explain this? So there is various models that I like in the literature about attitudes, but just to give you some idea about how we can think about these kind of mechanisms, is that there is, I would like you to focus a little bit on this model. This is the associative propositional model by Gafronsky and Bodenhausen. What they argue is that if you see a certain person, attitude object, then this will
bring out all kinds of associations that you have.
This may depend from situation to situation, but within a certain situation, the association that comes to mind may have an influence on the first evaluative reaction that you have. This is implicit attitude. All kinds of ways to measure implicit attitudes. Some of them are not really good because they're unreliable. But theoretically, there is a strong difference between the very first spontaneous reaction that you have towards a group. And that can have a strong influence also on your behavior if you do not think about it. Versus when you first think about it. So these associations also serve as the input for your explicit attitude, but it's mediated by propositional reasoning. For example, you can say if you see a black person and there is, because of all kinds of media coverage that link these groups with negative outcomes, right? In the Netherlands, for example, there is a lot of media coverage on Moroccan persons in terms of criminal activities over and over and over again, and you learn these negative associations. Now, this association comes to mind when you see this Moroccan person, and this may have an influence on the first attitude that comes to mind. But you may correct for that if you have propositional reasoning. Cavosi would call that you adjust the truth value. You say, ah, this is a negative association, or not. Go along with that, and then you come up with more other propositions. For example, I would like to treat everybody equally, and maybe have a more positive explicit attitude. Now, there are other models. I think that Matt knows these models. For example, Fassio's mode model, and that in which the event process starts with the first attitude that comes to mind. That's actually what Fassio calls the attitude. Automatic evaluation may also have an influence on what you explicitly argue and also your behavior, but that may be modified if you're motivated and you have the opportunity to modify. So if you have all these biases, implicit bias, there's still a possibility to correct for that, but you need to be motivated and you need to have the opportunity. And what do we mean with that? The opportunity is that you should not be exhausted, for example. Although the literature on depletion is quite really reliable, but we all know that when people are tired, they don't want to easily think before they do. So this is probably still a good hypothesis. When people are under time pressure, they don't have the ability to think before they do. So these more implicit biases, guided by these associations that come to mind, are more likely to influence your behavior. Or when people have all kinds of other things on their mind, when they're ruminating about something else that happened to their family, or when they're, when they have all kinds of other things on their mind. Now, you can say, what kind of behavior is influenced by these more associative, implicit kind of evaluations? And first of all, is, for example, behaviors that are really spontaneous under time pressure. But sometimes it's also really behaviors in which people think about it quite a long time. For example, in this kind of situation, when people have all the time to think about it. But it's such a strong, there's such a lot of information to think about. And actually, the negative associations may still guide your processing. It's like what we just talked about, sort of motivated reasoning. The negative associations may in the end result in a negative result, not to invite people for an interview. Ambiguity, therefore, ambiguous situations can result in stronger influences of these associative ideas. And this is also the case in faster decisions that people have to make. For example, in a threatening situation in which there is an officer that has to make the decision, should I withdraw? Now, the question is that it's not only about the opportunity. Like in ambiguous situations, people do not recognize the situation perhaps as a situation that in which a prejudice or biases is relevant. But when people do see that as relevant, then they should be motivated to correct. If there is no motivation, then they just go along with the association. So the values that people have, and I thought it was really interesting to look at the ideas of Arnott just a minute ago, these values could come into play very strongly in these kinds of situations as well. And perhaps this could be related to tradition values, but also universalism, I would say. But from my perspective, I would, in terms of how this would affect their behavior and their outcome, is that these values should become active within the situation, right? So, because we have all this, so for some people these values may be so broadly accessible that they will use them all the time, but a cue that may help them to achieve, or that may help them to remind of their values, may be very helpful in overcoming these kind of biases. So, the work that we did on the making certain values accessible may be relevant to this. Another aspect is perspective taking. So if you take the perspective of the outgroup, of the outgroup, then people might be more willing to go for equal values or to not be prejudiced for the moment. So we've seen, of course, in Europe, a strong tendency for negative reactions for Islamic immigrants from Syria and all over, and various other places. And we have also seen some time ago, I think 1.5 years ago, that one picture can dramatically change, at least for some time, the setting, right? When this kid was photographed on the beach, people felt really compassionate with the refugees. And I think at that time, people were more willing to set aside maybe some of the negative associations that they had. And of course, there's another way, is if the norm is really strongly related to be, to serve, to boost equality, then social desirability considerations may also help to reduce prejudice. Okay. Now, there are other processes that may result in less bias, and that is some of the work that we did, and also Jerry Flohr did, and Pablo Brignol, on several mindsets or mood states in which people, similar in this work is that it sort of undermines the certainty with which people use these associations that come to mind. So they sort of question the first thing that comes to mind, and therefore they're less likely to stereotype. If they're in a sad mood, or when they're in a state of uncertainty, of self-validation. And there are other ways to do that. And finally, I'm not sure whether I still have time for that, is one thing related to mindfulness. And I'm definitely not an expert in mindfulness, but my good friend and colleague Johan Kartemans is doing his research, and together with Johan, I supervise a PhD student. And I thought it was quite interesting to share these findings with you, on mindfulness. So I'm not sure whether you're familiar with that, but the definition of mindfulness is that it's about the way we regulate our attention, and one important aspect is decentering. This is observing experience as passing events in the mind. So instead of just going immediately along with the first behavior that comes to mind, you just let it. You watch those. You watch your own thoughts and emotions, and let it pass behind. So that's. Well, of course, this is an increasingly popular domain of research. But what is interesting is that in several studies, it seems to decrease hostile attributions, aggression, intergroup bias, and also measures of prejudice, like the IAT. And we recently did a study in which we had the hostile attribution bias scale. So then participants receive situations and they have to either fully see that for themselves as if they were in the situation and in one condition, and in the other condition we give them decentering instructions. I will tell you more about it soon. And then they will I'll give you the example. Imagine you see a friend and you wave at him. Okay, you see a friend, wave at him. He turns his head away and continues walking. What's he doing? So there are three questions now that come to mind, maybe that's in this line of research. How certain are you that it was intentional that he continues walking and that he turns his head away? How angry are you? And do you want to get him? Do you want to get even with him? Her. Okay. So the higher the score, the more hostile your attribution is of this situation. Now we had participants do four of these kind of situations, and then we had experimental instructions. In the control condition, we said, try to imagine this as this was happening to you. And in the decentering condition, try to observe your thoughts and emotions as passing events. And this was based on previous studies, for example, by Esther Pappies, who did this kind of mindfulness work in the healthy eating domain. And she was able to show that worked quite well. So we thought, let's do this again. With this kind of interpersonal situations. And then we had the dependent variable 10 vignettes at the end. Now, we had two studies. One was more exploratory, this one was a confirmatory study. And actually, we had a lot more participants in study two, but it strongly supported the idea that the decentering manipulation can actually prevent immediate negative reactions to the situation. So mindfulness can reduce these biases, but also the biases that come up in this kind of more like ambiguous situation. So I think this is a nice start. At the same time, I don't really like vignettes that much study. So we have to go for real interpersonal reactions. And maybe part of this may be explained by demand, but Johan assured me this is maybe 20%, but it's there is a lot of variance explained by the true effect of mindfulness. So I'm actually curious because the effects are quite strong. Let me stop by giving a sort of overview. So I started out with the idea that a lot of biases may be non-intentional,
and that this may be overcome if we give people the opportunity and we have the right motivation at the right time. For example,
have the perspective or have the values activated in the situation, the right values, which one we can discuss about.
Understanding the situation, right, so the ambiguity of the situation makes it much more likely that people are averse racist, right? Averse in terms of that they don't want to be racist, but they're still doing it because they have all this negative association in mind. And mindfulness may be one of the ways of thinking that we can induce in people to reduce this kind of immediate negative reactions. Or actually, also negative reactions, but they go away from the very first behavioral inclinations that they have. I talked about these non-intentional biases. Of course, it's interesting to also discuss these intentional biases, and I think that some of these sources, like the values and the mindfulness, are really important also for this for understanding these kind of processes. But today I predominantly stick to these non-intentional ones. Okay, thank you.